Wisconsin.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Molly Kanoko, and I'm a postdoctoral fellow, actually at the University of Minnesota now. I changed institutions. So who has eaten a potato in the last week? Anybody? All right, we're going to have fun today. So the chances are that potato that you ate very likely could have come from Wisconsin and been grown in Wisconsin, as Wisconsin is the number one producer of potatoes east of the Mississippi. And the region that these potatoes are produced in is actually called the Wisconsin Central Sands. And it's a region that has very coarse glacial soils, and they use supplemental irrigation to produce these potatoes in very intense systems. And they use these high-capacity wells to pump groundwater, and production has really intensified over the past 70 years in this region. And with that intensity of production, in addition to potatoes, Wisconsin has actually become a top five national producer of snap beans, sweet corn, peas, carrots, and field corn is actually grown as well, as these are rotational systems. So while that production is wonderful for the state of Wisconsin's economy, there have been some trade-offs, ecological trade-offs, associated with this intense production in the Wisconsin Central Sands. And the nature of these trade-offs is really in the type of connectivity between the groundwater and the surface water systems. Groundwater and surface water are very connected in the Wisconsin Central Sands and similar aquifers throughout Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. So this is the base flow index for Wisconsin, and the Central Sands region is circled, and you can see there's a very high base flow index for all of the trout streams that are located in the region. Same thing with the lakes. So as this production has increased, the lakes and the streams in the region have started to experience severe depletion. And with this depletion has been a loss of ecosystem services. So the trout fishermen, the homeowners on these lakes have lost a tremendous amount of property, and it's really put a tremendous amount of pressure on the community in these regions, or in this region. So producers really want to do something to try to help this problem, and regulators are trying to figure out ways to incentivize the farmers to conserve water. And we're in the proximal and remote sensing session, and one of the technologies that farmers are trying to consider to conserve water in the Central Sands is this conversion to precision irrigation. My team worked with a sixth-generation family farmer in the Central Sands region, Justin Isherwood. This is a picture of him. And, you know, farmers like Justin are experimenting with proximal sensing using apparent electrical conductivity mapping. So they're working with these agribusiness consultants in developing these maps for their region and attempting to use variable rate irrigation and implement those types of technologies. However, there are a lot of unknowns, that are currently preventing that implementation. So our research really addresses two specific research questions in relation to these unknowns. So the first one is, what is the relationship between apparent electrical conductivity and the soil textural and hydrologic properties in the Wisconsin Central Sands? And though the relationship between apparent electrical conductivity and soil hydrologic and textural properties has been well established, boy, is this a narrow range in these maps in the Central Sands, 0 to 12 millisiemens per meter. So in these really narrow ranges, are we still seeing intrafield differences in soil texture and hydrologic properties? The second research question that we attempted to address is, these are rotational systems, right? Potatoes, sweet corn, beans, peas, field corn. Could there be different amounts of precision required to irrigate the different crop rotations in the Wisconsin Central Sands? So that's why it was useful, those two distinct questions, to actually combine techniques, combine proximal sensing and combine remote sensing. So the approaches that I used is I mapped, worked with that farmer to map apparent electrical conductivity using a Varis sensor. I know this is a busy slide, and we're going to go slow through it. So I collected these 6 maps of different fields in 18-meter transects using a Varis 3100, which takes a shallow and deep measurement. And using those maps, we conducted a zone-based soil sampling approach at both what we call the topsoil depth, so 0 to 30 centimeter cores, and what we call the subsoil depth, so 45 to 60 centimeter cores. And we chose those depths because across all of the 6 fields on this farm, they represented the A layer and also the subsoil. And we wanted to make sure we were in the topsoil and subsoil for all 6 fields. So for all of these samples, these zone-based samples, here's an example of one of the 6 fields. And the L's represent sites where we also instrumented lysimeters and soil moisture monitoring at several different depths. So with our soil samples from each of these zones, we did a laser light diffraction to determine the soil texture, and we used pitot-transfer functions to determine hydrologic properties such as field capacity, permanent wilting point, and plant available water capacity. And we operationally validated these pitot-transfer functions using our soil moisture data. So we used regression and kriging to develop these maps of different soil properties, which is excellent. And then the second technique, if you'll bear with me, is using a remote sensing approach to map evapotranspiration. So this is the airplane study, is what I call it, and we conducted 12 aerial missions between 2014 to 2016. And in each of these missions, we instrumented a Cessna with a FLIR, with a FLIR camera, a multi-band imagery camera, and basically collected maps of surface temperature and also multi-band imagery. And we used the multi-band imagery to create maps of enhanced vegetation index. And from those maps, we were able to develop relationships between enhanced vegetation index and leaf area index or plant canopy height. So we used these maps and these spatial data in conjunction with meteorological data that was on site to create massive, high-resolution maps of evapotranspiration using the HERMIT algorithm that was developed in 2014. And this is kind of in the family of high-resolution ET maps that solves iteratively for the sensible heat flux at each pixel, leaving the latent heat flux or evapotranspiration as the remainder of the energy budget. So we were able to create high-resolution maps of evapotranspiration. And from there, because there were 12 missions, 6 fields, different cropping rotations, we wanted to compare across across missions within a single field. So we relativized evapotranspiration, and we used a normalized index to do that. And as you can see, these two maps kind of look alike, right? This is the available water holding capacity map, and this is the relative ET map. So here's an example of all of the relative evapotranspiration maps that we collected. And as you can see from the gaps on the particular fields, Wisconsin's very cloudy, and collecting aerial imagery can be challenging. So what we did, so we had a tremendous amount of data in this study. How do we take the data that we have and change it to information that could be useful to a farmer? So we, for each of the individual fields, conducted a Kendall's-Tau correlation matrix, or created a Kendall's-Tau correlation matrix with 23 different variables. So the different variables are all of the soil texture properties that we measured, sand content, silt content, clay content, the pitot-transfer-derived field capacity, plant available water content, permanent wilting point, and then the relative ET estimates, both for crop type and also looking at different parts of the field season, so different growing season months in Wisconsin, June, July, and August. And we were looking for different trends and relationships both between getting back to the original research questions, that narrow EC range that we see in these soils and the soil properties on one hand, and on the other hand, the relationship between relative evapotranspiration and electrical conductivity. So I know that there are a lot of data on this slide, so I just want to point out just a common trend amongst all six fields here, and that is this upper triangle is just looking at the relationship between electrical conductivity and soil properties. And though the ranges of EC were very narrow, there were still significant correlations between electrical conductivity and soil texture, as well as soil hydrologic properties. And the upper right corner is showing the relationship between electrical conductivity and evapotranspiration, relative evapotranspiration in different crop rotations. And what we found from this information is that not all crop rotations had similar relationships between evapotranspiration or crop water use and the electrical conductivity maps. So really our key findings here are that apparent electrical conductivity did correlate to topsoil properties, even at these very narrow EC ranges. We did not see that correlation between electrical conductivity, apparent electrical conductivity, and subsoil properties. So we concluded that these shallow EC surveys might be the most informative for precision irrigation attempts in the Wisconsin Central Sands and similar regions. Finally, because there was not always a strong relationship between relative evapotranspiration and electrical conductivity, we also concluded that these precision irrigation benefits might be crop-specific in different rotations. So what we really found is that in the potato and sweet corn rotations, there is a strong relationship between electrical conductivity maps, soil textural properties, and evapotranspiration estimated using our remote sensing approach. We did not see that relationship in field corn, in irrigated field corn. So, you know, for farmers that are implementing these types of technologies, they may get a better return on investment using variable rate irrigation on potato rotations or sweet corn rotations, but they might not want to be using that technology when they're growing irrigated field corn in the Wisconsin Central Sands. Thank you very much. That's a great question. The farmers are all using the Varis 3100. So it was really an issue of this is the practice that's occurring and we wanted to use the same technology that's being used in practice. Oh, what in the actual EC readings? Not very much. No, it really wasn't bouncing around that much. I would say a few tenths. Yep, at maximum. Yep. Oh, yes, that is exactly what I think we're capturing. That's put in another very elegant way, is that we're capturing just that the field corn doesn't have this type of, it's not showing us the water stress in our evapotranspiration maps that we're capturing in the other. Yep. Thank you.